Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody.
It's about 9:15 in the morning on Wednesday, but perhaps high noon for TikTok. The House is supposed to vote on a bill that would effectively ban it. I believe the bill says that the parent company can't be tied to the Chinese government, or the Chinese Communist Party, and so therefore it would force a sale for it to function in America, which wouldn't happen, and therefore it wouldn't be allowed to operate. And it's going to be brought to the floor through what's called suspension of the rules. Instead of going through the rules committee, it goes straight to the floor, which you can do. But when you do that, you need a 2/3 vote to pass. And all the reporting is that it's going to get that 2/3 vote. It's going to get a big bipartisan vote. It was unanimous at the committee level. Although it's not as clear, it's got a glide path to success on the Senate side. So do you think, Matt, this bill is it good that both parties are coming together to ban TikTok, or is this an interference in the glorious market and is going to anger all these consumers that love the product?
Well, it's definitely going to anger consumers who love the product. This is a wildly popular bill, but I think it makes perfect sense. We can't allow a Chinese-owned company to be in a position where they're able to collect data and propagandize American citizens, whether that's election interference or whatever they want to inject into the body politic, into the political bloodstream of Americans. So I think this is a serious threat. I applaud Mike Gallagher, the Republican in the House, who's been pushing this. I am worried, though, Bill, that this is not going to be received well by Republicans in the Senate. I'm seeing signs. Got a clip I'll play in a little bit of Donald Trump, who's changed his tune. He now seems to be opposed to banning or forcing the sale of TikTok away from a Chinese a company essentially effectively owned by China. And I saw something with Tucker Carlson basically saying, you know, if they can force TikTok to sell, then for, you know, election interference or whatever, then they can force Elon Musk to sell X. And so I suspect you're going to see people like the Rand Pauls of the world who are so worried about America spying on citizens, but I'm not sure they're so worried about China spying on us. So I think this is the right thing to do, which is why I think Republicans are probably going to find a way to ruin it in the Senate.
Well, and before we get to the Trump clip, which I think Trump's flip-flop, this is interesting, and it's sort of its own subject, but I just want to stay on the merits of the bill itself for a little bit. The Trump argument and the Tucker argument are obviously very specious. But is this an effective way? I mean, I agree with you that we don't want China hoarding our data, mining our data, influencing us through propaganda. But does this actually solve that problem? Can't China do other things? Have they even used TikTok in that way? Do we know they're actually doing this? And is it politically feasible? I mean, so many Americans use TikTok. They may not be locked into this debate yet, but once there's big headlines after the House passed it, I would think, you know, the TikTok hordes might well rise up and be like, what the hell? I'm reliant on this service. Maybe not, if not for social reasons, maybe for business reasons. They might be monetizing TikTok, and you're affecting my livelihood by taking this crude step that might not be solving the problem that you were trying to address.
Well, look, I think that is very true. And obviously, as someone in a and in this industry that's contracting, I'm not excited about putting anybody out of work. And as someone who, I don't want to call myself a content creator, because I hope I'm a little more than that. But, you know, we are on the social media, not on TikTok. So I'm sympathetic. Look, my wife's first cousin, Savannah DeLulo, is arguably the number one.
Is that the correct name?
That's the correct name. Samantha's her sister, I think. Savannah. She is the number one Wordle influencer in America, probably.
Number one. There's a ranking of Wordle influencers. And she is number one.
I've got another friend named Jordan Seawick, who's a very good musician, and he does these very cool things where he's a pianist. He'll record a song on piano, and then someone else that he doesn't even know, somewhere else in the country, in some cases famous people, in some cases randos, will record themselves singing it. And then they somehow TikTok merges this together seamlessly, and they get millions of views. Jordan, by the way, Jordan was a child actor, and I think the first one of the first big Will Ferrell skits on SNL. So Savannah and Jordan are very reliant on TikTok. I mean, they have millions of followers and all of that. It's a big deal to them to lose it. But and look, TikTok is already leveraging its users to try to pressure and lobby senators and members of Congress. To me, that is evidence already of their power. You give them, you open the door to them to even have a presence here, and good luck getting rid of it, right? Because now they have a lot of power. They have incredibly powerful influencers who have a megaphone who are going to use it now to keep China involved in our lives.
Have you discussed this with Savannah and Jordan?
No, I have not. I have not. I see Jordan about once a week, and I haven't seen Savannah since about 10 months ago. But
I just know, easiest for Trump to cave. I just want to know what's going to happen when Matt Lewis gets lobbied.
I will not change, because I mean, I think we have to view China maybe not as an enemy, but as an adversary. They do not like us, Bill. They do not like our way of life. It is insanity to give them control of the number one app in terms of influencing the future generations of Americans. It's crazy. We wouldn't do that with the Nazis. We wouldn't do that with the Soviets. But it's happened because they, you know, kind of got their hooks into us at a time when we were hoping that by injecting some capitalism into their system, that would bring about political liberation eventually, and democracy maybe. And like, that has not happened yet. Instead of us exporting our values to them, they are now exporting their values to us. We are importing their values, or at least potentially so, right? And so, yes, I'm not going to change my mind on this one.
Well, someone else who once sounded as steadfast as you was Donald Trump. But he was on CNBC this week and making a more nuanced argument. You have that clip?
Could have banned TikTok. I had it banned just about. I could have gotten it done. But I said, you know what? But I'll leave it up to you. I didn't push them too hard because, you know, let them do their own research and development. And they decided not to do it. But as you know, I was at the point where I could have gotten it done if I wanted to. I sort of said, you guys decide. You make that decision because it's a tough decision to make. Frankly, there are a lot of people on TikTok that love it.
We're having a glitch.
There are young kids on TikTok who will go crazy without it. There are a lot of users. There's, you know, a lot of good, and there's a lot of bad with TikTok. But the thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger. And I consider Facebook to be an enemy of the people, along with a lot of the media.
Well, there you have it.
That is Facebook. Such a bonkers clip. It encapsulates everything that is insane and disturbing about Donald Trump in a very, very short amount of time.
It has been speculated or rumored that a Donald Trump donor, a very rich donor who has some sort of dealings with TikTok, has been influencing Trump. That is the reason.
That, and also Kellyanne Conway, apparently, although she's technically not a lobbyist, has an affiliation with TikTok now. Apparently, has been on the phone with people. So there might be even, you know, other layers to the story. But just to focus on his own words, here's a guy that claims he is so powerful and so persuasive that he can fix almost anything. And then he says, I wanted to ban TikTok. I almost did it. I had it. I could have done it. But I said, hey, Congress, why don't you do what you feel like doing? And guess what? The issue was actually kind of complicated. There's different parts to it, and you can see it both ways. And now I'm on the other side, not because I have a different view of China, but I mean, I didn't say this literally, but this is the logical inference. Facebook is worse than China. Facebook is the enemy of the people. It didn't say China's the enemy of the people. It says Facebook's the enemy of the people. And if I take TikTok out of the market, Facebook will do better, and we can't have that. It's so hard for me to believe any reasonable person would listen to that and say, like, yes, this is a thoughtful leader who I want to get behind. He is clearly operating with a sense of fairness and principle that I find reassuring.
But Bill, it's consistent with other things he said. I wish I could remember the exact quote. He says so many crazy things, it's impossible almost to kind of keep track of it all. But he said he has implied in the past that his political adversaries, you know, the fake news media and the human scum Never Trumpers, that we are worse than foreign. You know, the foreign adversary is not that big of a deal, right? It's the enemy within that he is more concerned about. And so Facebook, an American company, he's much, you know, much more worried about them getting additional market share than keeping China. And Bill, I think, you know, this goes back to the whole thing about, as a Reagan conservative, this is the opposite of everything Reagan, you know, kind of the Reagan Cold War Republican Party of my, not just youth, but much of my life. Stood for. And there still are people like us, Mike Gallagher, I think, among them. But he's leaving, by the way. He's leaving, just like Ken Buck is leaving.
Now, I do think it is difficult for Joe Biden to exploit this, because I do think it is a complicated political issue.
And so Biden had on TikTok, right?
What's that?
But didn't Biden just finally put up a TikTok video like a month ago?
I mean, you know, in a certain sense, Biden's trying to have it both ways, too. He just went on TikTok, but he said he would sign a bill if it got to his desk, which I suspect he said because it's probably not going to get to his desk. It's probably not going to get maybe a bill gets through the Senate. I doubt it's going to be the identical bill, and whether they can actually iron out their differences or really trial it hard to iron out their differences between now and Election Day, I imagine is unlikely. So he can be on TikTok and try to reach those young voters, and not against TikTok to try to appeal to those who are, you know, nervous about China.
Let me just say something. Maybe I'll be persuaded. Maybe I'll have my mind changed. But as of now, my take is, if the Republican Party can't be counted on to stop China from essentially spying on us this way, it's worthless. And I'm not even sure how America can endure if we are so dysfunctional that we can't even agree on this. So I take this very seriously, Bill.
I think it'd be a little unfair. I think this is a complicated issue. I agree with you. We should be united in trying to prevent China from influencing our country and our politics. It's just an easier said than done problem. I mean, look, there's movies that don't get made because they upset China. And we can't easily band together to fix, you know, that problem. So it's just a hard problem. I think Trump he's been such a demagogue about China. Then the other breath will say, like, you know, Xi is this amazing guy, and he's wonderful, and I love talking to him. So I don't think Donald Trump's your man to address this complicated problem in a sophisticated way. But I'm hard pressed to penalize somebody because they don't take one stand or another on this particular issue. I do think it's complicated.
You're just mad about that Red Dawn remake.
which was terrible.
And I can't blame you, actually. Go see watch the classic. It's out there. Well, I mentioned Ken Buck, congressman from Colorado. My wife formerly was a consultant for his campaign. And he'd already announced that he was going to retire, not run for re-election. Lauren Boebert then moved districts to run and for that seat. But he has now announced that he is leaving, I think, next week. So he's done. He's out of there. It seemed like he was upset. We're going to talk a little bit about this Robert Herr testimony, but I think he was the third ranking member or something on the committee. And it took him hours before he was able to ask a question. Let me just play this clip. It's very short, Bill, but this is Ken Buck talking to Dana Bash from CNN about how great it is being in the House of Representatives these days.
Miserable right now to be, I mean, from the outside in, it doesn't look that fun. From the inside in, is it that bad that you're saying I'm done?
It is the worst year of the 9 years and 3 months that I've been in Congress. And having talked to former members, it's the worst year in 40, 50 years to be in Congress.
So not a great place to be. I've talked before about this, adverse selection problem where the good people are being filtered out and the bad people are being filtered in. What say you?
What's the question again?
Well, look, I mean, a couple things here, right? I mean, Republicans can't afford to lose a lot of seats. They're already barely in the majority in the House. But is Ken Buck, I mean, do you think he's leaving just for personal reasons? Or do you buy the argument that this place has become so dysfunctional that kind of decent people who want to actually get things done are not going to stay there?
I mean, the two things are mutually exclusive. And I've said this about other people. I hate the goodbye, cruel world, congressional resignation. I'm the kind of person who wants to work cross out and get things done. And so I'm leaving. So those people aren't in Congress anymore. It is entirely self-defeating and self-serving. You know, you are clearly unwilling to do the hard work to get things done if you're just going to quit. And in fact, people have been doing that work and actually being pretty successful. It just might be frustrating and annoying. And I'm sure in the case of Ken Buck's a weirder case because he's not a moderate. He's not the linchpin of compromise at all. He is just someone who has more principle than others on the far right. And so he's not willing to go down these impeachment paths, which I credit him for. But it's still a little confusing to me what it is he would like to be doing that he is not doing because of the current state of affairs. I don't know if there's some other issue.
He was supposed to be like chairman of a big committee. And I think Kevin McCarthy didn't like him. Or maybe Kevin McCarthy just wanted to like cut a deal with Jim Jordan because he needed the Freedom Caucus. Whatever the case is, Jordan got that gig. And that's probably part of it, at least. But
he clearly, I mean, much like Sinema, he's become estranged from his base for different reasons. But, you know, Buck's been out there pretty pointedly saying that his caucus has lost its mind over impeachment and has degraded impeachment. And clearly that puts him crosswise with the base. It just doesn't automatically explain why he's leaving now as opposed to the end of the term. But in doing so, he is weakening the Republican majority for a period of time. So right now, the GOP majority is 219 to 213. And so, because there's other Republican vacancies out there. And so they can only lose two votes today. If two votes flipped, you'd be at 217 to 215. And if a third vote flipped, then you'd be at a tie of 216. And so that doesn't fly. Now you go, once Buck leaves, that becomes 218 to 213. I think it's still, I don't think that changes the vote, because if you lose two,
I think they can lose two.
Right. So it's still losing two. Because yeah. You lose two, it's 216 to 215. So you can lose two, you can't lose three. Now, in April, there's a special election, I believe, for a democratically held seat. And assuming Democrats win that, it would then become 218, 214, and then you can't lose two. And then there's other, then the GOP vacancies start to be filled after late May. So again, it's only for a short period of time, but I don't know what bills are going to come up in that period. And of course, mind you, we so many bills are going through suspension and need 2/3. In those situations, this doesn't matter as much.
I don't have any inside info. Just reading the tea leaves, I bet you Ken Buck is going to announce next week he's got a job somewhere doing something. My question is, and you may not know the answer to this. I don't know the answer to this. What does this do to Lauren Boebert, right? I mean, so this is someone who is not, she was not doing well in her old district. She's obviously been under all sorts of scandal, and I don't think she's been fundraising that well, but she was planning on having this primary. Does this change anything for her? Will there be?
My understanding is that there's going to be a special election. I'm not sure if it's the same day as the primary. It might be. But a special election to fill the seat since he quit. And if Boebert is currently in a seat, she can't run in the special.
Oh.
And but so. Would,
okay, but it wouldn't matter because if she won the primary, she would still be on the ballot.
Yes, okay. But so if you like, can't, but if you can't run the special, does that disadvantage you in the primary?
Yeah, probably. See, here's what I was thinking is what would disadvantage her is if someone else had gotten some incumbency before the primary. Does that make sense?
But that's right, so last night, the governor set the special for June 25th, the same day as the primary.
Okay.
Oops.
So it sounds like it probably won't have much of an impact on whether she wins or not, I think, right?
Well, again, so someone might say in the campaign, don't vote for Boebert. She won't vote for me. I'll have the seniority that she won't have, because I can win this seat. Maybe she'd argue, well, yeah, I'll retain my seniority from before. It may just gets too in the weeds for people. But and I'm not even sure she was had the leg up in the primary in the first place. She doesn't live in that district. And she doesn't live in the district. She's done a whole lot of super weird things. And it's a crowded primary. I mean, my general view of these things is people who have ties in their district, who are better known commodities in their district, have a leg up in these things. So I haven't seen polling, so I can't speak authoritatively on it. But my guess is that she is not on the inside track to win that primary anyway. And this is one more small thing that doesn't really help.
It'd be great if she went down. I mean, Madison Cawthorn last cycle, Lauren Boebert this cycle. You know, look, I don't know if we're ever going to get Marjorie Taylor Greene or Matt Gaetz, but it's a step in the right direction.
I mean, obviously, it would be helpful for the Republicans to not have someone as clearly off the rails as her out of the caucus, but she's hardly the only problem in that caucus. Nancy, so I don't know how much of a real upgrade it would be.
Yeah, Nancy Mace, you're next. Because good luck, you know, that Charleston district. I know it's gotten more Republican, but she could be next on the list. All right, you know what? We should move on, Bill. And I think probably the last thing we would talk about today is the Robert Hur testimony. On we're recording this on Wednesday. This happened on Tuesday. I have a 2-minute clip that will set this up, Bill. It's I think from CBS News. Do you have any thoughts? You want me to run it?
Just run the clip.
All right, and then we'll talk on the other side.
Ties my explanation. Nor did I disparage the president unfairly.
Former special counsel Robert Hur's public grilling today at times looked more like a proxy fight for the White House. Republicans raised questions about President Biden's mental fitness.
What I'm trying to figure out is whether or not Biden's lying because he's still so senile.
While Democrats aired unflattering footage of former President Donald Trump.
An anonymous
really an ominous...
Her defended his report and its contention that the president was a well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory.
My task was to determine whether the president retained or disclosed national defense information willfully. I could not make that determination without assessing the president's state of mind.
Democrats said he went too far.
Mr. Hur, you cannot tell me you're so naive as to think your words would not have created a political firestorm. You understood that, didn't you, when you wrote those words?
Congressman, politics played no part whatsoever in my investigative steps.
Hur questioned the president for 5 hours over 2 days in October and wrote that the president forgot key dates, like when his son, Beau, died. But a 258-page transcript of the interview released today shows the president remembered the month and day, May 30th, just not the year. After the report was released last month, the president blasted her.
There's even reference that I don't remember when my son died. How in the hell dare he raise that?
Today, her explained.
The need to show my work was especially strong here. The Attorney General had appointed me to investigate the actions of the Attorney General's boss, the sitting President of the United States.
Several Republicans accused her of letting the president off easy.
All I have to do when I'm caught taking home classified materials to say, I'm sorry, Mr. Herbert, but I'm getting old. My memory's not so great.
In the hearing, Democrats also repeatedly called out the differences between the Biden and Trump documents cases. The current president had roughly 80 documents in his possession, while the former president had more than 300. Her had also acknowledged in his report that there are major differences in the cases. Nora?
Ed O'Keefe, thank you.
All right, so that sets it up for the conversation. I listened to maybe half of the hearing, and I just came away thinking that Robert Hur, I think we can question some of his judgment, but I think he is an honest broker who was trying to do his job. And the fact that Republicans and Democrats were both unhappy with him is probably a pretty good sign.
I half agree with you. I'm not convinced he was deliberately operating as a political plant, but I think he succumbed to the same affliction that Comey had. When he, I mean, it's not standard practice to choose to not indict and then make a public statement that disparages the person that you're not indicting. If you know the evidence to indict, you say, I'm not indicting, end of discussion, yeah. no further nuance or insinuations allowed, because then you are disparaging somebody in the court of public opinion in a way that the person can't otherwise assemble his or evidence and defend himself.
All right, fair. Let me jump in there real quick, Bill, because one thing I learned yesterday that I hadn't really thought about before, from her standpoint, that was a confidential document. He did not release that to the public.
Right, it was Gulick's decision to release it, but her had to know that whatever he puts on paper could well become public.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. But he sent that to the Merrick Garland, who is a Democratic appointed, you know, attorney general appointed by Joe Biden. And he was tasked with explaining, if you're not going to indict, why? And one other thing that I hadn't fully realized is apparently in 2017, Biden said, I have these classified documents. And then during the interview with her, he apparently said he had no recollection of that. So he needed to explain why not being able to remember something might actually allow a juror of good conscience to acquit.
But, well, two things. One, he knows how Washington works. If you put it on paper, it can get out. And he knows that giving that paper to Garland puts Garland in a terrible political position, because if he doesn't release it, it could leak, and then Garland could be accused of a cover-up. He has to recognize that. If he has something to say to Garland that he doesn't want to leak, he can get on the phone. That's what people do. He don't want things to leak, you get on the phone. Hey, Merrick, there's some stuff here that I didn't want to put on paper that can be a little sensitive, but this is also part of my thinking. That went into my decision. That's what you do in that circumstance.
But, like, wouldn't that also be evidence of, like, the game actually being rigged? What you're describing?
The standard practice is to not talk publicly about anything negative or incriminating if you're not going to indict. And by putting it on paper, you are effectively making those things public. So again, I'm not saying Herr was doing it because he was being dastardly. I just think I think Comey set a bad precedent here. And then Herr was following. And so the second point I want to make is this is in terms of just the quality of Herr's judgment. You know, you mentioned this one thing about what Biden said that seemed a little contradictory. So much has been focused on this question of the remembering when Bo died. When you look at the broader exchange, Biden very clearly not just know when he died, but the surrounding events when he died. He died when I was in the process of deciding whether or not to run for the president against Donald Trump and against Hillary Clinton in the primary. And he got a little mixed up what year that was. But that's totally different than like being in a complete fog. Where am I? What am I doing here? What is this piece of paper? It's a whole different level of cognitive decline. So like the fact that he would use that exchange to say, I can't indict, you should have indicted if that was the data point you were using. That's a really weak data point. I think you should have indicted. I'm just saying what he was using to make his judgments were very flimsy. Yeah. And I think that becomes clearer in the full document.
Republicans are in this position to say either Biden is not competent to be president or he should be indicted. Like those are your two options, right? And so Republicans do have that talking point. I will say, Bill, the timing of this is a little unfortunate. I mean, it comes on the heels of what I thought was a very good State of the Union address that Biden gave, which really, I think, undermined the idea that he had lost a step and that he, you know, was having cognitive decline. And then, I don't know, did you see this ad, the new Biden ad?
Yes.
You did? Okay. I could show it if you want. We don't necessarily have to. But I thought that ad, maybe we should show it, Bill, because I think
sure, go ahead.
It addresses the age issue. It doesn't just say I'm young and hip. It actually says I'm old, but it shows that he's with it. And then, Bill, this ad does something that you've been talking about, which is it makes the case that the economy is good, which is something you can't assume. You have to say it, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, here we go. Let's play it.
Look, I'm not a young guy. That's no secret. But here's the deal. I understand how to get things done for the American people. I led the country through the COVID crisis. Today, we have the strongest economy in the world. I passed a law that lowers prescription drug prices, caps insulin at $35 a month for seniors. For 4 years, Donald Trump tried to pass an infrastructure law, and he failed. I got it done. Now we're rebuilding America. I passed the biggest law in history to combat climate change because our future depends on it. Donald Trump took away the freedom of women to choose. I'm determined to make Roe v. Wade the law of the land again. Donald Trump believes the job of the president is to take care of Donald Trump. I believe the job of the president is to fight for you, the American people, and that's what I'm doing. I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Can we do one more take?
Look, I'm very young, energetic, and handsome. What the hell am I doing this for?
Old guys don't wear cool zip sweaters like that. That's a new guy, a young guy move. Look, I thought that was really good. And if nothing else, it shows him being energetic and vigorous. And I just fear, you know, I think Biden's team should worry a little bit that maybe this latest Herr testimony steps on that momentum they were building.
Well, I think the Herr testimony, both arguments got aired pretty well. Though it wasn't like the media coverage was Herr really drove a spike into stake into Joe Biden here. There were it showed a more complicated story than even Herr was telling. I think even the hearing itself is a one day story. So I don't think that totally messes up, you know Biden's resurgence here. I thought that was pretty good. There are things I would have done that are not in the ad. I don't think it's as creative an ad as Morning in America. I don't think it tells enough of a story. It does. does do a couple things that I do want to see. I think it is leaning in on the economy, as you said. I think I said a while back on the show that it might have been a different podcast. I really think drawing a conscience between Donald Trump is in this for himself and Joe Biden is in this for the American people. I think it's a very salient argument. Yeah. I'm seeing that come through, not just in this ad, but in a lot of Democratic surrogate messaging. So I think that's positive.
It's a good line. And by the way, here's another good line I heard recently. I don't know if Biden said this or someone else, but it's something to do where he says, like, I'll compare my 81 years of experience with his 91 criminal counts.
I saw Swalwell say that on CNN this morning.
Okay, yeah. That's a good line.
Yeah. I want to see, you know, I want to see the dystopian picture of 2020. I want to see cities on fire. And I want him to make the case that, you know, Donald Trump brought us here. He sowed hate and division in the country, and the nation was burning as a result. You know,
mine is a little more like I'm interviewing David French later this week, good Lord willing. But in his latest piece at the New York Times, he brings up that point, Bill, that you had been making about how crime and, you know, was Donald Trump warned about American carnage, but actually it was his term that kind of gave it to us.
Well, I mean, Trump's done a very good job at pretending his presidency, you know, went from 2017 to 2019, and 2020 doesn't count. And you're even seeing in polling, his approval, people saying they approve of his presidency are higher now than it was during his presidency. You know, there's a romanticization that's been going on that he has actively put forth. And that's why I think it is imperative for Biden to be like, whoa, wait a second. Remember that big fourth year? Like, it didn't just come. I mean, part of what Trump's trying to argue is like, this bad stuff happened that was out of my control. The China virus came in and screwed everything up. Everything I was doing before then was great. This is why I think the pandemic is not the starting point for talking about 2020. It's the rioting that you can tie directly to Donald Trump's leading of the American conversation that brought us to that point.
Well, let me ask you this, and then we'll get you out of here, Bill. We will ride off into the sunset, another end of the DMZ. Do you think, because Biden, there have been ups and downs in the past week, but there, you know, generally speaking, it feels like Biden has turned the corner in the last week. Polling seems like it's gotten better. He had a really good State of the Union. I think that's a very good ad he's out with. Maybe not Morning in America yet, but has he turned the corner? Can he keep this up, the Joe-mentum, or is this kind of a one-off and then he goes dormant again? That's sort of the concern, I think.
Well, there's an argument that the polling hasn't gotten better. Now, of course, we have very little polling that's actually been taken after the State of the Union address, but what little we do have doesn't show significant movement. We just had a USA Today Suffolk poll that came out that Trump up 2 in a race that they included every possible third party candidate, including unnamed no labels and unnamed libertarian, and it didn't do a straight two way. But there also was a Harris X and a Morning Consult that showed, I think even Morning Consult, but Biden might have lost a couple points.
I guess I have to quit reading one. Simon Rosenberg's Hopium, because I thought the polling was looking better this week.
Well, okay, it's very, very little post State of the Union, but what we have seen, you can't argue that he got a true bounce out of it yet. And I don't think that should have been expected anyway. We haven't seen a lot of State of the Union bounces. The value for Biden is that I got Democrats back on board. You know, we're not happy. We had a whole month of like open Democratic panic about age, and you haven't seen that in the past week. You're seeing the Democratic Congress people, the surrogates, all on point and ready to say, look, here's the guy. He just clinched the nomination last night. He looked good. I feel the Ezra Klein argument from a month ago. He can't campaign. He can't do this. That's put to rest. He obviously can do this. So people are saluting and going forth. But you can't expect that to necessarily turn the swing voters around on a dime. That's going to take sustained work. So the challenge for Biden is not so much that he becomes, dormant's not the word I'd use, but
he doesn't have to be president. And like, the job is a very complicated job. And like, you know, Gaza doesn't get fixed right away. And TikTok is a complicated problem. And the border is still lurking out there. You know, there's things that are still out there that are not easy to fix, that could well complicate his ability to just to have everyone talk positively and be and lean in all the time.
All right. Great, great conversation as always, Bill. Anything you want to plug this week?
Well, the Washington newsletter came out yesterday talking about how Biden does not need Trump to be found guilty to win. People shouldn't necessarily be hanging their hats on that. My column will come out tomorrow. I'm going to talk about the Robert Kennedy phenomenon, or lack thereof. And in a couple of weeks, through the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Library and Museum, I'll be moderating a panel on the 100th anniversary of the Indian Citizenship Act with a panel of Native American experts. That's happening on March 28th, and it'll be happening in person at the museum here in Northampton, but it'll also be accessible on Zoom and on YouTube later.
Excellent. Always read my stuff at the Daily Beast, of course. I've also been ramping up my videos here at YouTube. So if you've not done so already, if you're listening to this, go to youtube.com/Matt Lewis and make sure you can see when Bill and I play these clips. Good Lord willing, the technology holds. You can see them and not just hear them. I think it adds value, some of them more than others. Like the Katie Britt clip, you and I didn't play it, but I did a video earlier this week. And I think that is one, Bill, you have to see to appreciate how bad her response was, right? Hearing it was weird, but if you see it and hear it, then I think you can kind of appreciate how bizarre and cringy that State of the Union response was. And of course, Scarlett Johansson did the spoof of it on SNL. Also, I have started a new audio podcast, Bill, with my friend Guy Denton, who has been Jonah Goldberg's producer. He's now at AEI, and we're going to do a weekly audio podcast. So check that out. And so you go to
what's it called?
Wherever you get your podcast. It's called The Wrong Stuff. The Wrong Stuff with Matt Lewis and Guy Denton. Subscribe, like, all that good stuff. Always a pleasure, Bill Scherr.
Till next week.
We'll see you in the DNZ. I made it almost through the whole show without that. We'll see you back here in the DMZ next week.
I can use that clip now when you run for president.
You got it.
Take care.